Blog Talk Radio.
Afternoon, everyone. This is Scott Smith and Stacey Hopkins, and this is Down, South, and Dirty.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well today. Been a hard week. As you know, we got a special election going on in my part of town. You know, we got
and
92. And I'm working with one of the campaigns, so it's been kind of, you know, up late nights, looking at data, all that kind of stuff. But, you know.
You got the fun district. You're out there in DeKalb County.
There's a lot of finances out here.
And it's really interesting because, you know, it's kind of, it's giving us a bird's eye view because these are the majority, you know, mostly minority communities. I shouldn't even use that word minority, but they're majority communities of color. And watching the political power being realized and people waking up, it's kind of fascinating. So big ups to everybody who's running out there.
And even watching in between the races, you know, as we're supposed to be, in the 92 race, there are no Republicans running. So you don't have a whole bunch of that. And I'm going to give a shout-out to my candidate because to this dance out and dirt and we can do that. Doreen Carter, if y'all you live in Athonia, Conyers, and you live along that I-20 corridor on the north side of it, right there to DeKalb County, early voting is going on next week and next Saturday. Vote Doreen Carter for State House, House District 92. Shameless plug, excuse me. Anyway.
Yes, shameless partisan plug, and we don't care because, you said, we don't have to do that.
I'm not going to reveal my 43 pick until after the next forum, which is Thursday in Conyers. I'm going to put that up so people that's in the area who listen to the show can kind of see, because I'm starting to see the same faces at the forum. And a lot of people don't realize this. And this is in any race, just not our race. There are usually candidate forums going on. And a lot of them take place in the evenings, and some of them take place on the weekends. And they're open to the public. Go to these forums. They allow, and the majority of the forums I've been sitting in, they allow you to ask questions to the candidate directly. So if you want to know, show up. I had a hard question asked yesterday that was just, it was great. I like seeing citizens engaged. And talking about voter engagement, let's get into our burn treatment for this week. And this is a special one because, you know, we had debates on Tuesday. So we talk about voter engagement and voters' voices and the people's voice being heard. That kind of locks into the burn treatment this week. Because that was
Yeah, we had the debates. Since our last show, we had the first Democratic debate, one of six. Looks like there's going to be additional ones. I'm going to throw something in the dirty list because this whole, you know, there's going to be the first in the South political forum. It's not a debate. Don't call it a debate. But the South Carolina and Georgia Democratic parties got together to do a forum in Rock Hill being moderated by MSNBC's Rachel Maddow. It's really great. I got a problem with the tickets, okay? Georgia released the tickets, which, and it didn't matter who went out, this is the ticket to get. Those tickets sold out in like less than 5 minutes on both sides.
Yeah.
But in Georgia, they were $50. South Carolina, they were free.
South Carolina.
What?
What? No, do you know? I don't know. I've seen several people complain about that. And
they were free. They released them for free. They released them for free.
Okay. All right.
And
now,
and the original plan was to do it at the Coliseum for $25. Now, even still, whether it's free or $25, you coming up. $50?
Right.
Come on now, Democrat. And where's the money going to? Because, you know, there's a lot of people pissed off with the Democrats. And they don't
DPG.
Want, they'll, well, right, the DPG, like, yes, the Democratic Party of Georgia. So where the money at? And where's it going to? Because I don't think people would mind, you know, helping to offset the cost of the forum. But if you told them that money's going straight to y'all, people might be like, meh. So, you know, just be a little transparent about it and tell us where the money's going. You know, if it's for you and going for you, and if you're actually going to use that money to help candidates win here in Georgia, but if you're just going to put in pocket, you know, this is why people are pissed off at you. So,
pissed off in Georgia, period. It's not just Democrats. They're pissed off at government, period, because I don't know why.
Right.
To ask for money and spend money in the state of Georgia without anybody saying anything. But this is the other thing about it. If the tickets were $50 and they were gone in 5 minutes. Okay?
They were gone on both sides. No matter who released these tickets, they were gone. So people are so ready for it.
I seen one email come in. I'm a member of the state committee. So I seen one email come in. And before I could click, because I was sitting there saying, okay, I'm going to go to this. And I was getting ready to pick up the phone and call you and say, hey, do you want to go? I'm going to get these tickets. I was going to drop a C-note.
Because you love me, see? Because you love, you know you love me.
Yeah, you know, whatever. Even turn around and get your number. Oh, I didn't know emails. Tickets, a whole lot.
I had two emails. I had one that the tickets were released, and then I had another email that said, so sorry, they're all gone. So you can still get your name on the waiting list for South Carolina, but I've been talking with a couple of people. We're going anyway. If we can get in or not, we're going anyway. We're going to head up to Rock Hill. If you're in the Atlanta area, North Georgia, it takes you about 4 hours, straight shot up I-85. You hit I-77 and take that south. But we're planning on probably going anyway just to show support on the outside. So I'll try to get something up this week, and we'll do, you know, we'll just have the Bernie caravan coming from Atlanta. If you are down for this, I don't care what part of the state, South Carolina, Tennessee, Alabama, whatever, just come on, let's schlep it on over there and represent. So that's a little shameless plug for me. You know, sometimes these things just pop up, and a couple of us insane people were like, we should so totally do this. So this is what we're going to do.
You need to be here, and you feel, okay, now I'm going to go ahead and break this down. I got a new hashtag out, and I want everybody to pay this hashtag some attention. Because I got the idea from the fact that talking about the polls after the debate and people talking about, well, you know, Hillary's still the front runner, and we, and you know, a lot of us who watched the 2008 campaign was like, hey, Bernie finna Obama Hillary. You know, that is a term. She's finna get Obama. So, you know, Obama. One of the cries from the Obama campaign was fired up, ready to go. Well, I got a new hashtag for y'all, fired up, feel the burn.
Okay.
So, if you're out there, you can see, you know, it's on. I'm using it now. Even if you got the new, if you're on Facebook now or Twitter, and you've seen the promo that goes out before the show,
that says we're broadcasting on the air live. Listen now, and you see the hashtag Blog Talk Radio. The hashtag off behind that says "Fired Up, Feel the Burn." So we want that to make that happen, so people get that we're connecting the Obama campaign, the energy of that with Bernie Sanders, because most of us are the same people. We early adapters. We're coming into this game. We know what the truth is. But I heard so many people talking about that the weekend about how, oh my God, you know, we finna, this finna happen again. We were for Hillary last time. Yeah, what happened? That's right, Patrick Maxwell, my homeboy. Yeah, you see it. He seen on Facebook, been liked it. Fired up, feel the burn, shut it. So this is the thing.
And then,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, they are, one thing about Bernie Nation, we are a passionate bunch of people, because let me tell you, Bernie Nation has been going in on CNN big time after the debate. There's been some controversy, you know, with the polls disappearing and everything. And I hope people don't take this the wrong way, but everybody was like, you know, Hillary won, Bernie won. And I just have a question. What exactly do you win in a debate? Because to me, the only wins that matter are the nomination, the primary, and the general election. Those are the only wins that matter. Nobody's going to remember who won the debate. They're going to remember who won the election. Keep your eyes on the prize, people.
Yeah, well, we need to keep our eyes on the prize, Bernie, folks. But in actuality, if you go back even as we was doing the run-up to these debates, they was counting how many times Hillary got spanked in the debates with President Obama in 2007. And the thing is,
can we talk about the snapback moment, the head snapback when she said I was a progressive? Because I've been lost. I don't know what I am now. If she's a progressive, I don't know what I am. But that was my head snapback moment.
This is the thing that got me by that whole debate. There was a couple of – that was the biggest out of all of them. I'm a progressive. Because I wanted to jump through the TV and Secret Service would have passed me. Because I'm like,
well, we were trying to keep up. That's not as easy as people think.
Now, this is the thing. Now, we had this discussion on our show, and we might need to have another show on the isms. But being a liberal and a progressive are two distinct, off in the cuffs. They're two different things, people. I'm sorry. I know liberals want to attach us because being progressive is the popular thing to do. But see, progressivism has nothing to do with necessarily being a Democrat. You know, the first progressive in this country was a Republican by the name. Major progressive in this country was Teddy Roosevelt, a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's about how we govern. It's about the things that we believe in. Because I got plenty of Democrats who are damn well not progressives, and Hillary Clinton is not one of them. The whole fact that she can sit there and talk about that, and we know the biggest gaffe of the night that I don't think nobody has done to but us Bernie folks, when she said, when I was a senator in New York, I represented Wall Street.
And when she told him to cut it out, that's what got me.
Cut it out. That is not a progressive doing. Because, one, progressives, we don't fool with Wall Street like that any kind of way. Now, we're not socialist as in, you know, the way the Republicans talk about socialism. Communism and socialism is not the same thing. Democratic socialism is not like pure socialism. Okay, and American-style democratic socialism has nothing to do with European-style democratic socialism. So understand that. Okay?
Right. Right, and if you believe Donald Trump's interpretation of it, because he came out and went in on Bernie, that's how you know you're winning. When you got haters, you know you got winners.
Yeah.
And he pivoted straight to Bernie because he's
lying.
Right.
You look at my Republican haters are not going in on Hillary. They're going in on Bernie.
Right, because they know what time it is. They sat back there and said the same thing that everybody else did. Did you see Chris Matthews have his epiphany? Chris Matthews was like, MSNBC, Harbaugh, Chris Matthews. He was sitting down on, I think, one of the night shows, and he was talking about, you know, he was acting all brand new about Bernie. I think they're starting to read the tea leaves and realize that, hey, you know, what was stunning for me is that progressives, remember, we were the idiots in the room, we were the kids, we were all of this, until Democrats realized, oh, crap, you know who won? And when we experienced those losses, progressives won quietly across the country. Now that progressives are winning, it has become the nom de jour of the political season. Now everybody wants to be a progressive. Before, we were just, you know, progressives.
No,
we're seeing.
We're not letting you in the room. You're not going to bring the liberal, that liberal speak into the room. Because I'm going to tell you. Now, progressives, if you're a true progressive, you're not going to be mad at me for dogging liberals. You're not. If you get mad at me for dogging liberals, then guess what? You're probably not a progressive. Because one of the things, this is one of the things that we, as you can see between Bernie folks and Hillary folks. Now, there are some Hillary people who are truly, who are supporters that I know, that I respect that gangster because it lines up with the way they live, work, and everything else. If you're in the banking industry or you're a business person or this, that, and the other, you're most likely going to align with Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, and I understand that. And I understand at the same time you believe in some of the other things that we on the left believe in. You believe in raising, some of us believe in raising the minimum wage. And, you know, most of us believe in, you know, expanding Medicaid. And most of us some of us are against wars and foreign countries that we ain't got no business being in. But for it's an 80-20 relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Just like any political line. But the thing that gets me is the people who align with Bernie, who may even align with O'Malley. You cast a vote for Hillary because you think she can win. Well, what fresh hell do y'all think that this woman just said in the debate that all Republicans were her enemy?
Right.
That is not
how are you
going to
work across the aisle? Right. Well, how are you going to work across the aisle? If I'm a Republican and I'm sitting up there listening to this and I'm even considering, you know, because of the lack of a viable choice on the Republican side, and I'm looking at the Democratic candidates, and the first thing I hear is that, you know, you're my enemy. How, you know, I'm going to be like, you know what? You want to work with me? You know, I'm not going to work with you. You see me as the enemy. And what's really stunning is that people are like, well, she says she's going to work across the aisle. How? They're already foaming at the mouth at the mere mention of my name. They are waiting to eat her behind up in the general. So are we going to spend the whole election defending Clinton?
This is the thing.
You say Republicans hate Obama.
It ain't one thing Republicans hate more than Obama is a Clinton. You gotta understand this. This is somebody who got away. Her husband got away from their trap. Okay? She thinks be squirming out of this one about these emails in Benghazi. Which emails in Benghazi are complete bullshit to begin with.
That was a perfect moment when Bernie told her turned to her and said, "We are tired of hearing about your damn email." That was the best keep it 100 moment of the night. But he's right.
That's
the crisis
Bernie.
She created. That's your
mess. But that's another wonderful thing about Bernie Sanders is that if I promise you, the shoe had been on the other foot, and it was Bernie who had a scandal, Hillary Clinton would have went in 100 on Bernie, just like she tried to go in after him about the gun situation.
Yeah. Can we briefly talk about that?
Yes,
can
we can.
I know. But see, here's the thing, and this is really interesting because of the, you know, one thing the Gun Sense Coalitions need to understand is how guns are viewed, particularly in the African-American community. Now, I'm not really enamored of them, but, you know, there's a bit of a hypocrisy, if you want to call it that. You know, I own it. But in terms of what's going on with the Black Lives Matter and the police shootings, and this brings up to look into our history, and part of the liberation movement was about, you know, the embracement of guns for self-defense, not to go out. We didn't want to go out and kill all the white people, which is a basic misconception of it, but for defense. When we're watching, you know, black people being slaughtered and what is basically a slow, controlled genocide, you know, black people, we're America. We want the same right. As long as we got crazy folks walking around with guns, you know, waiting to pop us off, you know, we want the right to do that to protect ourselves, not for retribution. So, you know, this is opening up a really necessary conversation that I think white progressives, white liberals, the gun sense coalition groups need to understand that there are two camps. You know, I don't like guns because of the dumb shit that I see that goes on in our own community, something else we need to talk about. We maybe need to do a show on guns. But
yeah, we do.
But it was really interesting to watch him answer that question. And, you know, Hillary thought she had a gotcha moment. But the problem isn't Bernie Sanders' vote. The problem is the Democrats and how they backpedaled. They backed away from gun sense policies ever since they saw that as their way of picking up voters in other states. So they backed away and allowed these guns, you know, the NRA, they helped build that. You let them get in the Congress and run roughshod over them. So I'm glad to see Mrs. Clinton bring this up and to get Democrats fired up and find some of that testicular fortitude, but I'm hoping it lasts longer than the election season. Don't use this issue.
And this is my feel on it.
Okay.
This is my whole gun control issue. Now, the thing is that I think, like a lot of Second Amendment people think, that a ban on anything is completely stupid because guess what? They're going to get, the criminals are going to get the guns anyway. They always do.
Well, then let's get rid of all laws.
Right. That's like anything else. If you want it bad enough, you'll get it. But the thing is, I think for those of us who want to legally own and carry, there should be background checks that deal with mental health issues. Okay? I think there should be gun safety courses. I think you should have a license like you have a license for a car. The license to carry or the license to own a weapon should not be just so I can possess it. You should be able to go in there and have to take a test knowing that you know how to clean, safely store, and safely use said weapon. If you can't pull, if you can barely pull the trigger or can control, and you should have a different, just like you have to have different classes for the different type of vehicles, like you have motorcycle license. You got CDL. I think you should have to have a test for that because shooting in a pistol is not the same as shooting a shotgun, an AR, or any type of assault, what they call assault weapon or military-style weapon, have a different kick than regular hunting rifles. They different. So
you
I
don't
think that should
need
be
an assault rifle for anything you need to do in this country. If you need to go hunting with an assault rifle, what you need are marksmanship lessons. You don't need a bigger gun with a bigger clip. You need to learn how to shoot.
I'm going to explain to you why folks will take an AR to go hunting with. Because the only thing in the woods, the animal you're hunting is not the only thing in the woods.
What are you shooting in the woods with an AR-15?
The only thing in the woods, the thing that you're hunting is not the only thing in the woods. You got to understand this. If you're hunting deer, and let's say you're in bear territory, the bear is out there with you. Then you got to remember there's other crazy motherfuckers.
Yeah, because you in that neighborhood.
But you also got to remember there's other human beings out there who also may be crazy. So instead of you carrying a gun for self-defense, a gun for hunting, a gun for this, you get one that can do it all.
And that will be, that's it. You got to understand, and the AR, an AR that you can buy in America is only semi-automatic anyway. It doesn't shoot three-round bursts. So
okay, this is where my peace, love, and hug the tree side comes out of me. You know what? I would like to see the day when animals get armed up and start picking us off for sport.
Oh,
if you're not using it to eat.
Anybody from Alaska will tell you that Mr. Round and Mr. Moose, and he know where you at.
There's no sport to killing animals. If you needed to eat or for clothing or, you know, for whatever, which very few, I don't see people rocking beaver skin hats and you know, the coats and all of that. Unless you're using it for an actual purpose and doing it like the Native Americans do, if you're going to kill it, use all of it. If you ain't going to do that, you ain't got no business out there, and you don't need an assault rifle to do it. You just are doing it wrong.
This is the one thing that a lot of people don't understand about hunting. In most states in the United States of America, that when you hunt, you are required to harvest what you hunt. That means that most people who hunt eat deer meat. Most people who hunt are taking the skins and doing other things with the skins. In Alaska, you have to harvest, and if you're not eating it, you have to donate it to the state so that they can put it out as food. A lot of people who and you can only take two deer in the state of Georgia during the hunting season. So there's not nobody's out there like willy-nilly just killing everything. There are rules and regulations that go along with it. Because we want to keep the animal populations to a standard, because if you didn't, well, it kind of keeps, particularly in states like Georgia, it keeps the herds under control because they would overrun us if we didn't.
True, I get that part, but you know what? Mother Nature got a way of taking care of all of that. Sometimes man needs to learn how to stay in his lane.
True statement.
You know?
That's a true statement. But for our listeners, this shows how different even inside of, you know, 80% of this, me and Stacey agree with on gun control.
Mm-hmm.
You know? We 80-20, but this is how contentious this issue is in America. And, I mean, one of the things our country was founded on, the first battle we fought in our revolution was about the British coming to go take their gun stores. You know, that's one of the things. I mean, if you live in a rural area and we're talking about self-defense for that, if you live in a metro area, the police don't show up because they just lazy and don't want to come to your neighborhood. If you live in the rural area, it's because you only maybe have 10 sheriff deputies and on the whole sheriff's department, and they got to come 30 minutes across the county to get to you. So you might need to hold that joke off until Sheriff Billy Bob get there. And it gets like that sometimes. I mean, so Joker done robbed your house, you done came home, you done caught it. When the sheriff get there, the sheriff is only coming to pick him up. You got him on the porch sitting there, don't you move, I will shoot you if you move. The sheriff will be here in a moment. That's how it is.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't. The sheriff is coming to take him out of jail because you're not legally allowed to have a stockade on your property to hold him with. Okay? So that's one, you know, it's different. And that's what Bernie was trying to tell Ms. Clinton, was that when you come from a rural state or a rural area, guns are completely seen differently culturally. They are not just, crimes committed with guns in rural areas are a lot less than they are in metro areas. But gun ownership down there is connected with fun and self-defense. It's bonding, you know, hunting, outdoors and shit. Whereas guns here, that's crime, people holding you up. It's negative. It's a negative thing. So we have to find laws that are based on some compromise so that the people in the urban areas feel safe, and the people in the rural areas don't feel like their traditions and their way of life are being jeopardized. And this is one of the things we have to realize in America, particularly on the left, is that we have to, just as we want people to let bygones be bygones, we have to realize as much as some of these yokels, redneck, racist, bigots, as long as they own their own property, being racist and redneck, I'm completely fine with them. Do what you do. Don't bring it into the public space. I mean, we have to be looking at the same thing from our point of view. It's just like I was just having a little Facebook back and forth with one of the members of another progressive left wing organization here in Georgia, and they're talking about fireworks. Now, I keep hearing it. Now you, I know you complained about it, and I've not yet heard it. You know, it's about people now popping off fireworks all times of the day.
Well, I really don't have a problem with fireworks. You know, some people. Well, my neighborhood, they did. You know, by 11 o'clock, it was done. I don't know who was popping off. You know, late at night, but it is a nuisance. But sometimes, you know, some people have a hard time distinguishing what is actually a firework from what's actually a gunshot. And it's kind of sad that I can differentiate, and my children know the difference between the two.
But the thing is that, and most people in the hood can tell you the difference between the two.
They damn sure can.
We can tell you the difference between a gunshot and a firecracker. Yeah, we can even tell you the round it was.
But you know what, we're coming up on 2:30, and people are going to start calling in.
But now let's talk about our dirty list. Go ahead and shoot yours.
Okay, my dirty list, well, pretty much went through it. You know, State of Georgia, Department of Labor, you know, after the whole New Georgia Project brouhaha with Stacey Abrams and trying to get out the vote during 2014, one of the things that came up was the use of canvassers and, you know, people who they employed to use for get out the vote drive. So, you know, it's kind of a crazy issue, but, you know, most of the time people just, you know, you just get some people, it's temporary employment, but they have made it more difficult for nonprofits to hire canvassers for limited work during the season. And it's designed, they say, you know, they want to protect you from, you know, unscrupulous people, which there should be some mechanisms that, you know, people have to make sure that you're not getting people who want to, you know, get a hold of information. But they've kind of gone overboard and making it very hard. I have been looking into doing some
You there? Stacey?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
You hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
So, you know, it's really, really been crazy watching this go on. And the constant barriers that the state of Georgia puts up that are keeping people to vote. On a side note, I'm still going to throw in the city of East Point, and you got elections coming up, and you won't let, well, the city is still charging a fee for groups to come in and do voter registration. And I'm telling y'all, this is just something that just crawled up my crack and laid there. I can't, you know, it bugs the hell out of me, and it really bugs me that no one wants to do anything about it. And we may have to do a show about that, because some of the stuff is just spectacular that I'm hearing from the city of East Point and their city attorney. It's just, you know, they want to claim First Amendment violations, and I'm like, you're the one doing the First Amendment violation. But my dirty list is kind of short because, to be honest, I've been very busy and trying to get things together. But that's probably my most notable one. And Alabama, they're trying to backpedal from all this and quietly take care of. For those who are unfamiliar, Alabama came with a stringent voter ID law. There was a lot, and when they passed the law, they also decided to close down a majority of the DMV offices where you can get the ID at, and it was mostly affecting communities of color. Well, it was. Just all of them were affecting communities of color, but they're trying to backpedal from it. The governor is trying to work behind the scenes with Representative Terry Sewell to quietly get a fix for this because, you know, sunlight is something that a lot of people don't want. It's the best disinfectant, but, my bad to Alabama. And that's pretty much it for this week, but I'll probably have a more fleshed out list next week. So who's on your list this week, Scout?
Well, my dirty list, and I guess since I made my way back to DeKalb County, they just keep doing stuff that makes me go, huh?
Yeah, I'm going to let you take the DeKalb County dirties because it's just so much.
Yeah, so this is the thing, and I only got really one today. And this is not anything against the particular representative that did this, which is Scott Holcomb, who is proposing a bill to get rid of the CEO system in DeKalb County. And it's not that I'm necessarily against getting rid of the CEO system. But my problem is this. One, I've lived up under city management, under city manager system for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in DeKalb County, and all I can ever remember is the CEO system because Manuel Maloof instituted it. And he was the first CEO that came up to memory in my mind from being a child. When I was a child, that's all I heard, Manuel Maloof. Hell, his name is on the tavern that all of us Democrats love now, Manuel's Tavern. Okay. So the thing is, for me, DeKalb County has a problem that they want to continuously work on changing the type of government that they have, either through changing the county commission by getting rid of the CEO, adding in this presiding officer deal that they have on the county commission, to wanting to form all these cities. And this is the thing I keep telling folks as I'm coming across them in DeKalb County. It's not your damn form of government. It is the damn type of person that y'all keep electing to govern. You can get a city manager, and you still have county commissioners and county officials and city, and you can have new cities, and you have mayors just like you do up in Brookhaven. You that will screw the hell up, who are not good people to govern. We keep electing the same type of people. That's why the type of government we look like sucks. Hell, you can have whatever type of government you want, and it will suck based on the people. It's just like a gun. A gun by itself doesn't do a damn thing to somebody get behind it and pulls the damn trigger. That's the way government operates. Somebody has to do something. And we got a bunch of do-nothing, and we keep thinking, oh, we just change our government. It ain't going to change the rules. They don't follow the rules anyway. So why in the hell are we changing the rules? To try to make it easier for them to follow the rules? Or to try to keep them from breaking the rules, you're going to get a county manager because he will be still chosen by the county commissioners who either, one, do what the county commissioners tell him to do, which they will have him doing corrupt, not corrupt shit because, you know, I'm going to stop using the word corrupt, have a lack of integrity because everything they're doing is not necessarily corrupt. It's just they have a lack of integrity and a lack of transparency that causes people to get pissed off. You know what I'm saying? Lack of integrity and lack of transparency. So you will get a city manager, a county manager, who will outlast most of the commissioners, and he will start thinking that the commissioners work for him versus him working for the commissioners. And that's how it is in most counties that I have seen that have the county manager system. You go to try to fire that county manager you want to. I got a trick for you, but he know more about you than you know about him. Y'all think y'all going to jail now? Try to fire a county manager because y'all can't control him. Y'all will start seeing all kinds of investigations popping up behind because he's not there by the voters. You want somebody to govern you that you voted in the office. That's why we changed the CEO to begin with.
Because I just have a question whether all of this is a manufactured crisis. you know.
Because to tell you the truth, I heard yesterday, and I did some research, and it was come out to be true, that they had had this discussion 2 or 3 years ago about getting rid of the CEO system here in DeKalb County. And a matter of fact, the person who brought it up was then Commissioner Lee May. Who's not CEO. Now, he ain't so much on the end of getting rid of it because now he's CEO. But the thing is, it's not the type of government we have, people. It's the type of people you put into that government. The government
right.
only works as well as the people you elect. And if you have a if there is a consummate problem with the type of government that you're getting here in DeKalb County or anywhere in this United States of America, what you need to do is stop sending the same people back to government.
Mm-hmm.
Send somebody else new. Stop sending people's friends to government.
Garbage
okay.
in, garbage out, people. That's the basic computer
action. Take somebody who looks different from the mold. Find true public servants. Stop finding people who have to embellish their credentials. People who are openly fake. I need for people really to understand this. In politics, there's a lot of psychology involved in politics. From the side in which campaigns try to affect voters, and the way voters look at campaigns. If the regular person on the street did some of the things that these elected officials do in front of you, you look at them like, I know you lie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like one of your homies come up to you and tell you something, and you be like, and you give them that look like, I know you lie.
Stop
you
lying.
Man, stop lying. Why don't we start telling these politicians, can they do the same exact damn thing? When you start staring and you start looking around like you're looking for the answer to walk through the door, and oh my God, when you start taking, this is the one thing, and then you talk, this is a memory thing. When you start sitting up there and you tapping your head like you're trying to jog something through, you don't know. When you're looking up in the air like you waiting for Jesus to drop the answer on your lap, you don't know. And we look at people the same, like when people get interviewing for us for jobs, when we trying to hire a plumber, we look at all these same things. Most of these people we wouldn't hire, but we elect these idiots who do the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm. And plus, if you can't find what you're looking for, you need to run as a candidate.
Thank you. You know what? I'm going to tell you one thing.
Because you can't be no worse than what's already out there, trust me.
They driving me so close to saying, because, you know, I'm still trying to get settled back here. But y'all going to mess around and make me.
You should so totally do it. Go ahead, run. You know, people ask me that a lot, but I'll tell somebody else.
I'm going to start looking because I know what I want. I know what I want for the people of my state. I know what I want for my community. And I think I can get it done. And it ain't because I've got superpowers. It's because I know how to work with people. And our politicians don't want to work with people in office, particularly in the communities of color. Our politicians get in office and they think they fucking goddamn Idi Amin. Damn Charles Taylor. Zimbabwe, down in Zimbabwe.
Some do get a bit full of themselves, and I think education thing.
You start dressing, you start acting like you can't talk to nobody, you act like you ain't never had nothing.
But
you know what?
You know,
I feel like I'm broke. It keeps me in the game. But, I mean,
now,
the thing is, but that's the end of my dirty list because we have an actual show.
Yes. And
we can talk about it. But, so today's show, you know, because our two other segments kind of, you know, starting to eat up time here. But we got good information we want to put out. But
well,
today's
yeah.
show
is about, you know, we've been talking about inequality.
Mm-hmm.
And today's show is about inequality on in education. Now, I don't know if anybody seen those something. If you follow the Downsouth and Dirty Facebook page, I posted up an article from the Huffington Post on the 16th, which was Friday. And it kind of set the tone for me on the inequalities of education. And the article was called "Why White Parents Don't Want to Choose Black Schools."
I can talk about that from personal experience. Not as a white person.
How you feel about you? You know your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, one of the stunning things, you know, I lived in Hayville, which is kind of a suburb of Atlanta. And I live in the Tri-Cities. I'm now in College Park, which is part of the Tri-Cities area. Now, there are white people who live in these communities. And anybody who lives in South Atlanta will tell you, oh, yeah, there's some white people there. But when you go to the schools, you'd never believe it. Because, for example, most of Hayville schools, Hayville Elementary is just about exclusively Latino and black, subsequent for the middle schools and the high schools. And, you know, I'm sitting up there and I'm going, either we got a lot of white people who live in that community who don't have kids, or they're sending their kids somewhere else. I was right with the latter. They're sending their kids somewhere else. They're sending their kids to private school. They're using the system to send their kids. One of the most stunning things, I have a child at Tri-Cities High School. And, you know, they came home one day, my two daughters, one just graduated, and they were like, Mom, you know, we're sick and tired of seeing the kids. We have to wait for a bus because we have to wait for, there are kids who actually go to Tri-City, but they go to the parking lot to catch the bus to go to schools on the north side of town. And there's a particular dynamic in Metro Atlanta. The north side is mostly white and affluent. The south side is where you find a lot of the urban and the, you know, more communities of color. And it's basically where that balance shifts. So, you know, it's kind of infuriating to see these white kids who are going to the south side. We used to have a program called Majority to Minority that allowed kids from a majority school to go to one where they would be a minority. So there were Southside kids going to the Northside. People started getting mad about it, the Northside people. You know, once again, we get to they're taking out stuff. And I posed a question in front of the Fulton County Board of Education at a meeting a few years ago. I'm still waiting for an answer on this. Because they decided to create these affidavits of residence that basically blocks you that basically killed off the M2M program. And the question was this: how does one steal a free education? Now, I need for people to marinate on that, because what those affidavits did was basically criminalize you. I live in Fulton County. I pay Fulton County taxes, but I cannot send my child to any school in Fulton County. I am locked into what my home schools are, which the board designates as my home school. So that is automatically set up a criminalization. The next phase of that, and for those who are seeking to get their child the best education they can, then they turned around and they decided to, you know, create this this illegal statute through these affidavits that criminalize you from doing this, actual charges. And we have had some mad drama. We are seeing now in the city of Decatur where there's been some issue with kids who are not technically in the city of Decatur using city of Decatur schools. You are now a criminal for trying to seek the best public school education for your child. And this is what a lot of people are doing. But the issue of education, and not just in where I live in Metro Atlanta, but also in the rural areas, they also started creating charter districts. people are getting all wee-weed up about this as they find out they're coming in their community. A lot of these districts in the state of Georgia are already charter districts. So that set it up, the conditions for these children who are supposed to be going to their home, air quote, home schools, to go to these other schools that are more affluent. And because they're getting higher test scores and they're looking better on paper as a candidate than my child, they're getting in and my child is being put on the waiting list. It's kind of crazy to put a child on the waiting list because children do not go in a state of suspended animation and then you just reactivate them when the perfect school comes up. You got to get your kid educated. And so it has really, really been frustrating to see what's been going on and to hear we got to save our schools, we got to do this, and we have so many pieces of inequality that are really setting up an unfair playing field for our children who are going to public school. And it's really frustrating.
There's another story that I had posted.
But people think private schools are better, and they're not. They're not necessarily better.
They're not. And the thing is you know, another story that I had, you know, and we talk about this a lot when we talk about building, knocking down some of the inequalities, is that we talk about education, we talk about economic development, we talk about everything. But what happens when your kid graduates from school and there's, in your particular community or your town or your region, there's no opportunities for them? And we're pushing these kids to graduate, but there's nothing there for them. And that's a part of the other inequality.
We're pushing them to graduate. We're not preparing them to actually graduate in the real world. We're telling these kids, you got to go to college to be something, and you do not have to go to college. College is not for every child, but what we don't do anymore, when you and I went to school, there was vocational training that was a part of your school day. You know, there was home ec, there was shop. There was opportunities for you to find what you were interested and good at. And we don't have that anymore.
They don't really do it anymore. There's computer literacy classes, there's stuff like that. But I took the business track for my electives. And I took typing, I took basic accounting, I learned how to deal with old time ledgers. This is before they really started using Excel, and you actually had to learn how to use a ledger. And I took classes
on how to do presentations.
And how you used to do presentations. And this is before I was doing presentations, before you had PowerPoint. So you had to learn how to actually you know, make a graph. And this then you learn how to do that.
With actual graph paper.
Yes. I mean, you learn how to use a lithograph machine. That's how you used to do copies before we had Xerox. We used to call them the Ditto machine. You remember the Dittos? You used to get them and they were fresh. They smelled. You used to sniff them and get high.
You know what? See, you know, and you just brought up a memory of me because we would be like, oh, we want to do the machine because we did. We wanted to sniff the paper. You know, I guess that was a precursor. They should have known we were going to be problem children. But if you go to the more affluent schools, they tend to have these programs still here, whereas, you know, schools that affect Black and Latino and Native American students don't have these type of resources available. And
they
come.
And we all paying taxes, like you said before, we all pay taxes into the same pool.
But here's the problem with inequality, though. But we set it up because the United States is one of only a few nations who they fund their schools through a subtaxation. It's mostly school and property taxes that fund them. So you're automatically on the wrong end of the spectrum if you live in a neighborhood that does not have a high tax base, that doesn't have a lot of affluence. You're automatically short. And this just sets up, and then you have another.
And they do try to budget the schools
based on the tax digest of the district that that school is in. So if you live in a neighborhood, even though you're paying taxes directly to your county is looking at the valuation of your home and the digest of your particular district for that school and is trying to budget money to them in that form of fashion. And if anybody's telling you any different, those politicians are lying to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how because if they're not doing it that way, guess what? Then the money should be split up equally amongst all the schools in the district, and everybody should be having the same amount, the same level of education. So at least the same resources to be able to give an opportunity to their education. Because at the end of the day, it is up to each individual to get your education. But if I don't have the, if I don't have an opportunity available to me that someone else has available to them, then I can't take advantage of that opportunity. And that's where the inequality comes in, because certain kids are not being availed the opportunity to get the education that some other children are getting.
Right.
Causes outcomes in our communities that, you know, now, true enough. Now, one of the things I was reading in the story that was in the Washington Post about what happens when you graduate from high school in America's poorest region, this story is about a young man in Mississippi.
I felt so bad for Buddy.
You know, he graduated. Now, there's some things that this young man has done in his life that has made it difficult for him to move along. But at the same time, these issues are being exacerbated by the fact that his school couldn't have dealt with some of the problems he had anyway.
Right. That town is poor. I mean, poor. They can't afford the OR pool. They poor.
You know, it's like this. Most kids in poor neighborhoods go to school for one reason every day. And do you know what that one reason is?
It's a safe spot, supposedly.
No, it's not that it's safe, because you get your ass whipped in school in a heartbeat. But it's the one it used to be. Mm-hmm. It used to be the place. It's the one place where you usually can get a balanced meal.
Right. You go to eat. You know, learning is just like a little plus. But you go to eat. You know, and you go some, you know, a lot do go to learn. I won't take that away from you, because there are a lot of hard working students who are busting their behinds despite all the challenges that are before them.
Right.
And that's another part of the story. We got kids who are hustling hard to keep up with these challenges and barriers that are put before them that other affluent, you know, children in more affluent areas do not have to deal with. But what's really curious, and I had an experience, you know, I have a girlfriend. She decided to put her child in private school. My child, I opted to keep my child in public school. We both came out of a charter school environment. Kipp South Fulton schools in Atlanta. I was one of those founding parents. My son went there. And graduated. My daughter, she didn't. I opted to pull her out and put her back in the public school because it did not fit her. It was perfect for my son, not for my daughter. So, you know, we were doing the college scramble and trying to find somewhere to go. And what was really stunning for me was that while she, you know, put in, you know, all this money to send her child to public school, our kids graduated at exactly basically the same place. Their GPAs were maybe a tenth of a point off. My daughter was slightly lower. Neither one of them qualified for HOPE, okay? And one of the questions that came up to me, for me, out of that conversation was that, okay, you sent your kids to private school. You paid for books. You paid for uniforms. You paid for fees. You did all of this, and your outcome was no different than my child who went to public school. So I had just asked the question, there's only two things for me to ask. Either your child is really not doing so good, because they're, and we don't know it, because private school kids don't take the same battery of tests that public school kids are subjected to. Or there's something, you know, and she kind of got offended at that because it's basically saying either your child is stupid or there are barriers that are holding back these public school kids, and they're doing better than we thought because they're trying to keep up with these tests. And we can get in the Common Core and all of that. Basically, Common Core has been renamed. They've taken the test and just given them new names and thrown them at you, but the test still exists. Now, if private school kids do better because they are not held, their teachers are not forced to teach to the test and to actually educate our schools, then why can't we do that with our public school kids? And the reason we can't do that is because the state creates the state and the federal government. And one thing I do want to get out before the people start calling with the foaming in the mouth, the federal government jackbooted all that. The federal government provides about 10% of educational funding. So before you start going on a rant about Obama and this and that and stuff and start foaming at the mouth, it ain't Obama doing it. It's the states who are doing it.
Yeah, if you're in Georgia, it's Nathan D's fault.
Right. And Nathan, and one of the reasons we wanted to do this show, too, was because of the Opportunity School District constitutional amendment that will be on the ballot in November of 2016, not 15, 16. And it's going to ask people to create an Opportunity School District that would basically, the crux of the whole thing for me is this. The state of Georgia wants to come in and take over schools that they deem as failing, that they owned from the beginning, and it failed on their watch. That's the basic crux of the whole argument.
Where they deny QBE funding, schools where they them basically turn their back on, and then now they want to come in. So I mean, a lot of folks, if you're in Georgia, you've heard a lot about this, and it pops up primarily in the areas where the schools exist that we're talking about it. If your school system is not being affected, you're probably not talking about it. But you should be, because this is why.
QBE funded?
QBE is like a balancing for the school. The state says it's going to give a certain amount of money to each school. Quality basic education is what I think QBE stands for. Part of the Constitution of Georgia mandates that the state is responsible for the education of the children of the state of Georgia. So each county is given QBE based on the need. But still, we've not funded QBE in each one of those states to 100%, and God knows how long. It hasn't been done since Senator Perdue was governor, and he was the first Republican governor in the state of Georgia. And so it's been slipping down the slide since the mid-2000s, the early 21st century, basically, when the Republicans took power. So,
and they basically played a shell game with the educational funding.
Right. Now if you ride around Georgia, you'll see brand new schools popping up all the time. So you'll be like, wow, they're building brand new schools. Education got to be wonderful here in Georgia. Now, I agree that teachers need to be paid more. But at the same time, I think more money needs to also go into the students, because we don't spend as much money per student as we used to. And even if the teachers are given a raise, if the teachers are not given resources to be able to teach, then what's the point? And those resources are better in certain schools than they are in others. And then, like we talked about earlier, we had this private school situation. And, it is crazy because, like you said before, you go into school and you'd be like, I know there's a lot more white people around here than I see these kids in school. But at the private school, I know in Troop County, where I used to reside, we have three high schools. We have Troop High, we have LaGrange High, and we have Callaway High. And then, that's how, and our school districts are based on those high schools. Well, LaGrange High has probably the biggest concentration of our white students, and that's the school that's inside of the city of LaGrange. Now, Troop High takes in kids from LaGrange at the city of West Point. But the kids that go to LaGrange, from LaGrange that go to Troop, the ones who live in the county, and a lot of them live in the county, but they also take the kids from West Point. Now, West Point is a majority African-American town.
Mm-hmm.
When they merged, they used to have their own high school. And when they merged those two schools and they finally had integration in Troop County, the first thing that popped up was LaGrange Academy, which now, that's a big private school. Then you had Lafayette Christian. That popped up. Now, subsequently, African-Americans have opened up a couple of private schools of our own in that area. We have Sound Doctrine Christian Academy, and we have Dawson Street Christian Academy. Now, neither one of those schools are on par with Lafayette Christian and LaGrange Academy, except for in one place. Dawson Street has one of the best football programs in the county. So most of the boys that go there go to play football because their grades are not good enough to play in public school. So Dawson Street will take them in so that they can
pull from the football program.
Right. And see, the football program draws money in for them to be able to operate the school. And if you got a good
We got the Cam Newton syndrome going on too. Everybody thinks
inside of our school systems. That's another inequality that exists in our sports programs. Now, growing up here in DeKalb County, I went to Shamrock High. Our football team was not one of the powerhouses of the county. We were not used to laugh at talking about Shamrock playing some football. It's laugh. Okay, But if you took Shamrock students to an academic bowl, we were stomping you. Okay, our C student was equal to some folks' A students.
Mm-hmm.
And my school was a majority white school. We had a lot of great parents and a lot of resources came into that school. And now I originally came from McNair. That's where my home school was, McNair High.
Mm-hmm.
And that was vastly different educational outcome. Now, McNair is better today, and I'm going to tell you why, and I'm proud that McNair is better today, and that's because they have an excellent administrator over there. They have an excellent administrator over there, Chanel Davenport. Now, I love Chanel for two reasons. One, because she's an excellent educator, and she's also my cousin. But she's serious about education. But she's serious about education, and that's why she's just turning 30, and was an administrator. She came into the school system as a teacher, but she's been teaching. She was teacher of the year for a couple of years straight. She's very serious about education. She's serious about getting her parents involved in it. She's serious about chasing down the resources for her school. Now, the thing is that all administrators should be that passionate about chasing down their resources. Particularly when you know you're going to get them. But we should nation have to be chasing down resources. We should
I
be
was
giving them
say that.
Because they should be getting it because education is important to all of us.
Well, it allows you to get on that ladder to lift you up out of poverty. And, one of the things that we said in the beginning of the series was that, you know, it'll never be equal in terms of your outcomes, where you end up, but the starting field should be equal to allow you the opportunity to succeed. And we do not have that. We have set up a couple of generations to fail.
You know what I'm saying? That's where the equality comes in. The opportunities should be equal. The outcomes will never be equal because we're all individuals. But one of the things that we in America fail to understand is that if we don't give a good solid foundation, which is education, then everything else fails. Because I'm explaining, and a lot of people, my people on the right, understand this. Y'all love the military. Y'all talk about how powerful the American military is. The American military is having a problem recruiting for two reasons: fat kids and dumb kids. Now, I'm not saying dumb is being derogatory, but these kids are coming in.
Y'all send your emails and your comments to Scout. He said that I didn't.
Okay, but this is the thing. These now we're keeping it real. But these kids are trying to join the military. They can't pass the ASVAB. And the ASVAB has, and let me explain to y'all the ASVAB system. You can score from like the 40 percentile to the 99 percentile and still get in the military. It is according to what you're going to do. If you score on the low end, you're a bullet catcher. That's all you're going to be able to do is take bullets. You go into the infantry, you go on the sweep floors and handle ropes on ships. The Air Force probably won't take you. The Marine Corps will not take you. Okay, if you're in the 99 percentile, you can do whatever you want. If you prefer to catch bullets, you can. If you want to be a nuclear engineer, you can. If you want to be in aviation, you can. Okay, so it's not that hard to get in there, but you got kids who can't even pass the freaking ASVAB. And then when they get in there, you have to stick them in remedial classes just to try to get them caught up. So what they're doing now is they're asking folks, even with GEDs, even if their GPA went high enough, they'll turn around kids and say, hey, I need you to go get some community college for at least a semester before you come into the service. These kids, most of them are joining the military because they couldn't afford college to begin with.
So I got a son who's actually thinking about that option.
Right. So you have to sit there and think about this. Education is affecting national defense. So if you're on the right and you want to get rid of public education, then you really don't want America's military to be as strong as it possibly can. Now, we have one of the things we've touched on, but we really haven't touched on, is how race fits into this equation. We talked about why white kids and parents don't send it, but another reason, and this was said on one of my Facebook posts, that, you know, it's my normal little crew, and sometimes they call into the show, but, you know, that was talked about, well, I sent my daughter off to school in middle school, and the school had a lot of black kids in it, and there were three pregnant girls in the eighth grade in this school, and all they did was fight every day, and they was having problems, and all these problems came from the black kids. And I don't want my kids around that. And then I was like, well, hold on. I went to a school with all white kids, and I had pregnant white girls running around the school. They usually got ushered out a little quicker. Most of the problems came from the upper middle class white kids. They were the ones, you know, setting off fire alarms and, you know, hanging dead cats and outside the principal window and TPing the school. And all them were terrorist acts that they you know, perpetrated during my, you know, 4 years of Shamrock High. But it's always the black kids causing the problem. People want to find all the negative reasons to why the black kids are causing problems. But, you know, why is it always us that they still cause problems? Nobody ever read, well, white kids do it. Oh, it's cute kids are being kids. That's just the culture of our school. But when black kids do it.
You know the answer to that. Hidden racism. And sometimes it ain't hidden.
Well, some people really just don't want us educated. They don't feel like, and some of our elected officials, you know, kind of let this skirt over their head sometimes, that y'all allowing, if you're on the school board or the county commission or you're in the state house or state senate, you are allowing some of these racist sentiments to float by because you're voting with these idiots on issues that are basically born out of hate because you allow somebody to tell you, oh, it's going to make life of your people better.
Well, you know, and we've got race kind of rears its ugly head when we talk about education and equality because, you know, one thing, big ups to the ACLU for their school-to-prison pipeline initiative. But one of the things that we discovered or that I discovered looking into this and what I kind of knew from personal experience, you know, there is a problem. And like you said, like you brought up how, you know, white kids will be saying, oh, that's just kids being kids. And then when it's black kids, they're predators. We got to lock them up. We got to do something. During this, I got from The Nation, they got a breakdown of some stats. During the 2011-2012 school year, black students accounted for 18% of the country's pre-K enrollment, but made up 48% of preschoolers with multiple out-of-school suspensions. I'm kind of confused. How do you suspend it as a preschooler? What are you doing? I mean, are you drawing outside the lines? I mean, come on. I'm hoping that they're talking about older. You know, right. You got to be like, you got to be Debo up in there, you know? But black students were expelled at three times the rate of white students. Yeah, I can believe that. Black girls were suspended at higher rates than all other girls and most boys. American Indian and Native Alaskan girls were suspended at higher rates than white boys or girls. Nearly one in four boys of color, excepting Latino and Asian American students with disabilities, received an out-of-school suspension. This is stunning. One in five girls of color with disabilities received an out-of-school suspension. And these stats were taken from a study done by the Department of Education. A third of these schools, a quarter of the schools with the highest percentage of black and Latino students did not offer Algebra 2. A third of these schools did not offer chemistry. That's basic. I mean, when I went to school, you took Algebra 1, you took Algebra 2, you took trig, you took chemistry, and calculus.
I asked this question about and I was on the, why the kids in regular chemistry didn't actually get a chance to go to the lab, but the kids in AP history, AP chemistry did get to go to the lab. And this was the thing that I said. This is what they say.
What?
That's about the kids that were in regular chemistry class blowing up something. But guess what? They're like, hey.
This well, not you know, I, this now not let me. Now, it all depends. To me, AP is the same curriculum that public school, I mean private school kids are getting. It's comparable. If you're in public school and you're in the AP class, you're doing it right. My daughter, she was placed in AP courses, and it's very hard for a child to keep up with it after being lagging. You know, she's in a curious place because she's a little bit more advanced than the regular class, but she's struggling in AP. And a lot of things, you know, she went to the AP class and she was like, I don't know what you're talking about because I wasn't taught that previously. That's a problem. That's inequality right there in the friggin' school, you know, because everybody should be on the same speed.
I'm glad that you brought that up because this came up in the forum yesterday when we was talking about education. Now, here goes another one of these shameless deals.
You should have called me. I could have came and blew it up.
Yeah, my candidate, Doreen Carter, was just talking about this exact same situation. And what she proposed was that we have these moments, in the sixth grade and ninth grade, we have like a stop moment where we go in there and we go back and reteach the fundamentals of all the, particularly math and Englishes. But you may want to extend it to the sciences, too, because they deal with different theories or whatnot. Because a lot of kids, if you don't get a grasp or you lose a grasp on the fundamentals at some point, you get behind and can never go. And nobody's going to take time for if you go back and reteach you, so that should just be a stop moment in the ninth, sixth grade when you go into middle school, and a stop moment in ninth grade when you go into high school to say, okay, we're going to do a refresher this year, because you got time. We got time. What we don't have time for is the kids to stay behind.
Mm-hmm.
We got everybody back on the same level because we don't know what happened in elementary school. We don't know what happened in middle school. So we're gonna take and we're gonna do a reset. Let's get bring everybody back up to speed. These are the basic fundamentals of mathematics and English, and we may need to add the sciences in there since STEM is so important these days, so that we get everybody on the same level. But you are absolutely right, because that's when the inequality starts showing up. And I mean, seriously, I was kind of in the same position your daughter was. I was a little too advanced for regular classes, but when I got into AP, unless it was history, which I always slayed history, don't care who it was that I was taking, but I wasn't necessarily up to par for AP. And
mm-hmm.
I struggled, but killed it, but I wasn't going back to the regular. They offered me, keep your GPA up, you might want to go back to regular classes. Like, nope, I'll just stay here and suffer and catch a D and pass the class to get the credit, but I'm not going back there and not learn anything. I mean, my GPA wasn't going to learn something. And see, that's another thing that I think happens when we look at the inequality in the school system, is that we're so focused on the numbers of the grades. The thing is in Germany, you have to take an oral test when you get done. Not just a written test, an oral test. And that might be better for some kids versus taking a test on paper, because it's about, do you have a grasp of what you was taught during these last 12 years of school, or 13 years, I think it's in Germany. You know, the last 13 years of school, do you have a grasp of what you learned? And
mm-hmm.
a lot of we tried to do it at the graduation test, but that failed. Because I think that test should be given a lot earlier than what it is to give us a chance to get these kids reset. But,
well, you know.
But it should be if you learn something or not, because kids are taking classes and learning to memorize the past tests. We're not actually teaching them critical thinking skills and how to solve real-world problems. I see it in the workplace every day. That you cannot.
Well, you know, education, I'm not an educator, I'm a parent. That's what I do best. And, you know, I depend on educators to know what they're doing, just like they depend on me to know what I'm doing. But from what I've noticed in education is that, you know, every time we keep talking about we need to reform, we need to find new ways. And, you know, my father, he always taught me, no matter what type of problem I was looking at, to go back to the point where it broke and figure
right.
it out from there. There was a time
right.
we had this right, and there's nothing wrong. You know, people coming up, we have to stop teaching kids memorization. No, they need memorization to learn the basics. And in elementary school, that's what you should be taught, the basics.
Right.
You start critical thinking in middle or junior high and high school. You know, and it's a gradual progression into that. But we used to have it right, and it's fascinating to hear people, we need to, you know, reform. We have to find new ways. We have to add technology. We got people to the moon with a pencils and a slide rule, you know. And so, you know, but I was sitting in a PTA meeting and when my kids were in elementary, and this was at Hayville Elementary, and it was kind of funny. You know, I'm the type of parent that kind of, like, blows up things. I don't mean to, but I just ask questions. But we're sitting there, and they're presenting us with this PowerPoint presentation about they couldn't understand why, you know, kids hit the third grade, and it was a curious phenomenon that they noticed that, you know, the kids were doing great until the third grade, and they started sliding back, and everybody's sitting up there looking like, wow, what is it? And I go, it's the test. I said, we start giving them these freaking tests in the third grade. And there's a direct correlation between those dots you have up there on the board and when you start instituting these particular initiatives with these kids. And I am not an educational scholar. I'm not a professional. I'm just a parent. And I'm a product of public school education up north. And it really wasn't that hard for me to see. And I'm like, y'all was sitting up here acting all new, and we know what part of the problem is, but nobody has the will or the testicular fortitude to fix it. You know, all this pandering, you know, we need testing. We have always had, and on the flip side, on the left, we have like a full-blown freak out about standardized testing. Chances are, if you're hollering about the problem with standardized tests, you took one when you went to school and you remember the only test prep you needed to take it was to make sure you had two number two pencils. They're called the Iowas, and they are still done to this day. The problem is that testing has become a very lucrative business, and education has become a hustle in a lot of communities. And we tend to swing to the all or nothing when talking about education. And one of those issues is charter schools. Now, I'm a progressive, but this is where me and the progressive movement kind of part ways on charter schools. You know, there is how charter schools were initially designed and intended to do, and this was a union guy who first came up with the concept of charter schools. This came out of the unions, people. And how it was designed and how it is currently being instituted are two different things. But charter schools are not a bad thing. If you think they are, I wish you could have asked the late Grace Lee Boggs, who recently passed away at the age of 100. She and her husband started a charter school in Detroit. There are a lot of great charter schools in the country that are doing good things in communities that need it, because we keep hearing the rally cry. I'm one of those parents who have heard for damn near 30 years, we got to save our schools. But I keep asking the question, who the hell is we? Because when we say save our schools, me and a few other parents are the only ones that are there. Everybody else is somewhere else. So, you know, I want to challenge the white progressive community on charter schools and how you perceive it and what you've heard about it, because I'm one of the few parents who have had a child in both the public and charter school system, and I can tell you there are things worth saving on both sides, but none of it will work if you're not sending your kids there, and it's not going to change if you're sitting out there. You know, if I see more kids or more parents on the football field than in a PTA meeting or volunteering at the school. And it's very difficult to hear people, you know, talk about we've got to save our schools, and they don't have a clue what is actually going on in some of these schools. We're not getting the best of teachers. And I've heard teachers say in my children's school, we have teachers who teach in schools in communities like mine that send their kids somewhere else. I heard a teacher say, I would never send my child to this school, but you teach there. You teach there. And it's so, I mean, it is really, really the problem of education and inequality, the different ways it affects from race, from economic, there is just so it's complex and it's simple at the same time.
Right.
We've got to wake up and start realizing that we all play a part in saving these schools. If we love public education like we say we do, we're going to have to do a little bit more, because right now we're not doing enough, and that's myself included. I'm just literally, I'm exhausted. I'm really, really exhausted. So you want to close this out? We got like 2 minutes left.
Yeah. You know, education is one of those things that we really got to work on. And I can always tell by how our shows roll, you know, we didn't get a caller at all. We got to do better.
Well, we didn't advertise the number either, Scout.
And we didn't. But usually somebody just calls in crazy, because I know that I look at the numbers and I know by who's listening. But next week, we hadn't really decided on which part of inequality we're going to tackle, but we're probably going to deal with gender inequality, because there's a lot in this country, you know, gender inequality. And we're going to throw some LGBT and, you know, LGBTQ in there. So be prepared.
Yeah, there'll probably be some arguments. I've been having some interesting conversations on Twitter. Lord, my Twitter peeps. Twitter is out of pocket and unhinged, but if you post certain things on certain comments, you're guaranteed to get a number of trolls.
But I think this is Danny Poppin' Dirty. This is Scott Smith with Stacey Hopkins. And we will see y'all next Sunday.
Peace.